I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend, cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor, no one's ever gonna keep me down again. Well, yes, I am white, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong.
This is Karen Testerman. At Smart Girl Politics, we believe in free markets, personal responsibility, and limited government. The show takes a look at the latest news and developments throughout the state of New Hampshire from a conservative woman's viewpoint. Whether it's social, economic, or financial topics, Smart Girl Politics will cover it all. Armed with our wits as our weapons, we aim to bring more women into the political process through activities that increase financial literacy, safeguard personal liberties, and integrate day-to-day life issues. Our weekly one-hour show takes a look at the latest news and developments throughout the state of New Hampshire from a conservative woman's viewpoint. It's Smart Girl Politics, hosted by Karen Testerman and Susan Olson on New Hampshire Family Radio, WLMW, FM 90.7. This program is pre-recorded, so we will not be able to take your calls at this time, but thank you for listening.
This is Karen Testerman with Smart Girl Politics, and in studio we have Smart Girl Nancy Elliott this morning. Nancy is she's become quite an international star, having started out as a state representative. Actually, she started out as a mother and a wife, and then she started to grow her wings and became a state representative, and now is an international speaker on euthanasia, and she's been planning a lot of good things. So welcome to the studio, Nancy.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you for having me. You make me sound really important.
Well, I think you are, and I think it's really kind of exciting to see how God uses people in the most unexpected ways, because I'm sure that was never on your dream sheet.
I never thought I'd do any of that.
No.
No.
It's like me. I know there's a lot of things that are not on my dream sheet, and I go, wow. How did I get here, and what, you know, you can turn around and you can see the path that led you there, but it was not anything that I sort of sat down with a pencil and paper and said, in 1993, I will be doing whatever. And so it's always exciting.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
so where are you off to next? I mean, you're going.
I am going to Rome.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to be meeting with some leaders there to discuss the problem of euthanasia across the world and hopefully get a plan to fight it.
Oh, great. Well, that is an area that we don't hear a lot about, but it seems to have crept in under the radar to a lot of our hospitals, and we don't even really realize that it's happening.
That's true. And it's not anything that's discussed for the most part in the public, but behind the scenes, you know, doctors, nurses, I'm sure, are fairly aware of it.
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting because I was up on the terriesfight.org, where Terri Schiavo was basically starved and not given hydration. When was it? It's been several years back now. It seems like it was... you know, in some ways, it seems like it was yesterday, but it was quite a time back. And because of court decisions, et cetera, her, even though she had family that wanted to care for her, et cetera, they allowed the husband to be able to make the final decisions, and he said withdraw the feeding tube and the water. And so she basically starved to death. And even though it's interesting that medical people will tell you all it doesn't hurt, there's no problem, it's very peaceful, it's very painful.
Yeah, Yeah, just imagine, you know, you're dying and they're not giving you a drink. Yeah, it happens a lot here, but the only time you hear about it is when somebody like Terry Schiavo's family makes an objection.
Right.
For the most part, it just, you know, happens. And they actually, in London, in England, they have a real problem with it. They have a thing called the Liverpool pathway, which if the doctor decides that it's your time to die, they put you on it. And in some cases, it would be very correct. You know, the person is dying. They're going to die in a couple hours. You don't want to feed them and make them sick. But there's other people that aren't imminently dying, and they stop feeding them, and the family will ask for food and water, and they'll say no. They're on this Liverpool pathway. And the people, a lot of the regular people, are starting to really complain about in the newspapers over there.
Right, and it actually happens here. It happened to my uncle.
It does.
My uncle's family was attending him and taking care of him and so forth, and he had Alzheimer's, and in Alzheimer's, eventually your brain forgets to how to tell body to swallow and so forth like that. So, and he had reached that stage. He was still a cognizant. He still walked around and so forth, but he was having trouble keeping food down, so they were going to put a feeding tube in, and his wife came in and said no. She didn't want him to have water or food, and it was really sad because my cousin tells me that he called out at one time, and he said it hurt so much, make it stop hurting.
Oh, so, that's so sad.
It is, and yet we don't want an animal to suffer like that, and yet we'll let human beings suffer like that. So, and you know, the thing is, you're aware of what goes on in Obamacare, and Sarah Palin took a lot of heat for calling attention to the fact that there were death panels there. But
well, they're there. You know, they may not be called death panels because that would be too, you know, noticeable, but they're making life and death decisions. Who deserves to die and who deserves to live?
And, you know, they couch it under a lot of different terms. What are some of those terms, Nancy?
I'm coming up blank on that right now, Karen.
I'm thinking, like, don't they call it death with dignity.
Oh, that, yes. Death with dignity. They call it aid in dying. Aid in dying, they're killing you.
And didn't they just defeat a bill down in Massachusetts that would have allowed for assisted suicide?
They did. They did. And it was a ballot initiative, which usually plays very well because the public doesn't know all the ins and outs as far as how this can be used to abuse seniors, especially those who have money. It's another path to get at that money sooner. So if you don't really analyze it and you just go in and say, if I'm sick, should I be able to kill myself? Well, a lot of people would say, I wouldn't do it, but who am I to tell my neighbor? And they go and check, okay. And so it's really a very miracle that we were able to stop that. And there was a coalition that worked very hard to expose what this bill did.
And there were some other implications that because Boston and Massachusetts, in Massachusetts, is such a hub for medical treatment, there were some far-reaching tentacles that would have occurred because if they had passed that particular bill.
Well, this is true. Boston has the finest medical schools probably in the world. They train doctors for all over the country, all over the world. If they also have the New England Journal of Medicine, and if it became the standard of care to kill your patients in Massachusetts, that would spread. It would spread all over the country. And I had people on the world stage that were concerned that it would be the downfall of the entire world.
Wow. And we don't think about a little incremental step like that having such a massive effect of unintended consequences down the road.
A little ballot initiative, yeah. You know, who would think?
One of my readers also reminded me that we often forget, we keep talking about Obamacare, but we often forget that Hillary had her health care and that was sort of a forerunner to what we're experiencing today, and this, and you know, I'm sure that there were other little incremental steps along the way that assisted us in getting our legislation all lined up within each of the states that would just allow this to be a little push to get it over the cliff.
Yeah, it's the same plan. And you know, talking about the euthanasia in connection, you cannot sustain the health care bill without taking health care away from those who are very sick, you know, and aren't deemed as having the higher quality of life.
And, you know, I wonder who determines if you have the higher quality of life? I mean, do you have to be absolutely perfect? Is this a Margaret Sanger move?
I would think that, yes, they are looking for perfection. We only need to look at Oregon to see how the government has used their assisted suicide bill. The state-run insurance company, you know, that would be like a Medicaid type thing. Now, if the person has a disease and they're not expected to live longer than 5 years, they would not be getting treatment. So say you had cancer and your case would be 49% curable to live over 5 years. Well, you don't make the criteria, you know, because
you have to be more than 50%.
Well, I'm not sure what the percent is, but you've got to have the expectancy of living longer than 5 years.
Wow. And so all of these people who have been given a prognosis of maybe 6 months to a year and end up living for 5 to 10 years would fail that criteria.
They would be denied treatment. So anybody that you know who has outlived what the doctor told them wouldn't have gotten, you know, the treatment, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing to me how this seems to have crept in, and we often, I keep thinking back to, well, we often wonder why, what gives a child, I remember Gary Bauer spoke about this. He said, what gives a child the idea that she can take the baby that she's just delivered and throw it away like a styrofoam cup? And I often think that it's because we've become more cognizant and more pushing of death-type activities than we have of protecting life and making sure that that people exist. So,
well, we've also left any kind of self-sacrifice. You know, if it's going to be hard to care for your ailing husband or parent, let's get him out of the way.
Yeah. That's really something. Well,
this past weekend, there were back-to-back rallies at the State House as hundreds gathered for the annual March for Life, followed by a Guns Across America rally. New Hampshire Right to Life sponsors the annual rally, and this year marked the 40th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court decision, commonly known as Roe v. Wade, legalizing the destruction of human life in the womb. The worship team from Hope and Christ Church in Chichester provided music for the rally before prayer and speakers addressed the crowds. In addition, the Gun Appreciation Day rally followed with hundreds more gathering. And the speakers at this rally seemed to focus on preserving the Second Amendment right to defend your life, family, and property. Actually, it's concern over the loss of 27 innocent human beings, adults and children, has caused gun control advocates to make their moves and attempt to control the ownership of guns. And in reality, the two issues are based on the fundamental rights guaranteed by God, or granted to us by God, as stated in the founding documents of this country. Life is an unalienable right, and it is our duty to defend our lives, our families, and our property according to our founding fathers.
We have to take a short break, and this is Karen Testerman with Smart Girl Politics and Nancy Elliott, our Smart Girl expert on euthanasia. And we will be back after this.